Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As we contemplate the future of farming in South Dakota this month on SDPB Radio, the most important voices are those of the people working the land. Mark Misar farms 10 miles north of Tyndall, South Dakota. He's also the agriculture education instructor for the Bonhomme School District. One of the things he teaches his students about are the principles of soil health. And since so many South Dakotans are essentially detached from farming, we asked him for a lesson in the basics. So let's start with a little background. Are you born and raised in South Dakota, and how did you sort of get back into farming?
Yes, I was born and raised on the farm where I'm currently residing, and that's really how I got my start. I was grown up, raised on the farm, helped my dad when he was farming. Had the opportunity to attend SDSU. I got a degree in agronomy. And then after college, I did return full-time and back to the operation in 2011.
Did you think that you always wanted to come back? What kind of conversations did you have with your dad growing up about coming back
Yes.
and being part of it? Yeah.
Yep. Coming back to farm was always something that I had an interest in doing. Even in high school, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And that was the reason for getting that degree in agronomy. I thought that would be a very valuable and useful degree, something that I would be able to use on the farm. So really did have that intent, even at a young age, to come back to the family farm.
Did you always believe that you could, or was there a sense of apprehension that it wouldn't be possible?
I did always think it was going to be possible. I did feel that there needed to be some changes made, but there was never that feeling that it was something that was never going to work. So to answer your question, I did always think that it was possible.
Let's talk a little bit about your operation. Give me an overview, please.
The farm that I'm running right now, it consists of 650 acres, and I rent that from my dad, my uncle, and then a third landowner as well. And half of that land acreage is in native hay meadow and pasture. And then the other half is in row crops and small grain. And then I've also got 70 shorthorn cows.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit about soil health, because that's a topic that keeps coming up as we discuss the future of farming this month on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. And you're kind of an expert on this because you're even teaching the next generation in school. Help me understand, when we talk about soil health, what are we talking about? What defines it?
Soil health, you can ask 10 different people and you're going to get 10 different definitions of what soil health is. But for me, it's really referring to the overall soil quality and maintaining those important and vital soil functions so that we meet our needs today and also ensure that future generations can meet their needs as well. And some of those functions, the two most basic and simple ones would be sustaining plant life and also providing a healthy ecosystem for that the soil organisms that are living in the soil.
It seems like from the people who maybe don't have a connection with agriculture or students who haven't thought much about it, that we take that for granted, that soil just does what soil does.
Yes, I would agree with that. A lot of people, they may feel that if they're not in production ag or connected to agriculture in some way, that the soil has no impact on them.
Yeah.
But everything that we use, whether it's food, products that we use, it all started with the soil at some point. Whether that be plants that were grown, feed that was fed to livestock, it all starts with the soil. So it really has a very important impact for everybody, not just the people that are involved in production ag.
Go ahead. Yeah.
We can go further with that as well. And, soil is going to have a major impact on things like water quality, air quality, the nutrient density of food. So, when you start to look at it in those aspects, it really does impact everybody.
And if we don't pay attention, how fast can practices, can our, you know, how we farm, how we use the soil, how quickly can we do pretty permanent damage? In a generation, you know, in a few years, like what, in a season? How long does it take to sort of, poor practices run into trouble?
You know, we can look at that from a couple different perspectives and a couple different angles. If we have low diversity in the system and if we are using excessive amounts of tillage, we can really deplete our organic matter levels quite significantly. Just a lot of the soils in southeastern South Dakota were originally probably 7 to 8% organic matter. I know with the extensive cropping that's been done over the last 100 years or so, a lot of fields are down to that 2-2.5% organic matter. And organic matter is going to be one of the primary components in maintaining that soil productivity. So, you know, by depleting organic matter, that's going to take several decades to deplete that. But if we start looking at things like soil erosion, whether that's wind or water, those are events that can happen relatively quickly.
Say with flooding or with a massive rainstorm.
Yes. Okay. You know, if we've got significant erosion events, like I said, either wind or water, those can have significant changes in the soil productivity over a very short period of time.
Yeah. And then once you sort of see, you know, you mentioned that sort of 2% number, how do we turn that around, and how long does it take to bring that back to a higher percentage to sort of reclaim what once was for the soil's health?
Building those organic matters back up really revolves around a system of mimicking nature, where we can use like a forest ecosystem or a native range ecosystem as our template. And if we look at those systems, there's no mechanical disturbance of the soil. There's very little, added fertilizers. There's no pesticides. The ground is covered year round. There's lots of diversity in those systems. There isn't just one plant species that's grown. And then in some capacity, there's also animals involved in it as well. And those would also be considered like the principles of soil health. And if we can start to include some of those in our management of the land, that really helps in rebuilding those organic matter levels and improving the overall quality of the soil.
Okay, like I'm in your class now. go over those principles one more time. So it's no tilling.
Yep. So with those principles, we want to reduce the mechanical disturbance of the soil as much as possible. We also want to reduce synthetic fertilizers and pesticide usage. Obviously, it isn't always going to be possible to reduce them entirely. Those are very important tools, but they need to be used wisely. And, we want to use them as efficiently as possible. We don't want to be overusing them. We also want to keep that ground covered year round, because as soon as that soil is exposed, it loses its armor, and now it's susceptible to the wind and water erosion events that can, have a major impact on the productivity of it.
Talk to me a little bit about, in your personal operation, and how you've made transitions from one thing to another. Was there a time where you had to transition to no-till?
Yes. Most of the land that is in crop production, whether that's corn, soybeans, oats, and wheat, the majority of that land is in no-till and has been no-tilled for about 10 years. Transitioning from a management system where tillage is used to one where the soil is no longer worked up, it does take some time for things to kind of transition and get used to that that tillage pass being eliminated. But there are some things that farmers can do to kind of ease that transition. And I found for me, the easiest way is to take ground that was in alfalfa and just not use tillage to kill the alfalfa. That alfalfa hasn't been worked for several years. And then, you know, moving into a no-till crop system following alfalfa tended to work very well for me.
Why did you make the transition 10 years ago? What was happening at that time that made you want to change things up?
The main reasons for me wanting to make that transition at the time, it was limited labor. I was doing the majority of the work on my own. And then also for financial reasons, tillage, the equipment costs money, the fuel to go across the fields multiple times costs money. So I was really doing it from a labor and a cost savings perspective initially. And then over time, I started to see that I was reducing my pesticide usage. I wasn't spraying as often. And then I was also starting to see less of a need for commercial fertilizer as well.
You mentioned animals and, you know, so talk a little bit about integrating livestock, and you mentioned also having cattle yourself. So how does that fit into soil health? Help us understand that.
You know, livestock are a very important component to maintaining the soil quality. If we look at natural ecosystems, they all have animals. They are needed to help recycle some of the materials that are on the surface. They help stimulate the activity of the biological organisms that are in the soil. So if we've got livestock to any capacity in the operation, it's really going to help with that transition. But it does also add one more thing that has to be managed. If you've got muddy fields, obviously those critters can't be out there. They've got to be moved to another location so you don't have too many issues with compaction taking place.
I see. So in a year like 2019, with some really difficult spring and fall seasons from a precipitation standpoint, how has your year been here in South Dakota?
It's really been no different than any other year. With the no-till being done for several years, I've got fairly good infiltration. So the water, rather than a lot of it running off of the surface and ending up in the low spots, a lot of it infiltrates and goes into the soil. So I was able to get everything planted. I didn't have any low spots that I needed to go around. I also use a lot of cover crops, and I think all of those factors combined really mitigated some of the excess moisture that we were seeing this year and made it possible for me to carry on without too many changes.
That's a pretty strong testament, really, with the year that we've had.
Yes.
So when you know, for people who are not farmers, when they drive around the state of South Dakota, can you tell by looking into a field what sort of, soil health principles are at play here, what kind of practices there are? Obviously, if you see something that's just all dirt, you know, you might have a clue. How do people pick out? I'm trying to get an idea from how many farmers and producers are using this kind of practice.
You know, as to the number of farmers who are using these practices, I guess I can't say. It's hard telling what people are doing. And then you would also ask how people who aren't connected with agriculture, how they would be able to tell if there's healthy soil or if there's soil health principles being used. Really, a person isn't going to recognize any of those unless they've been exposed to them, you know, in some way, whether that be a class that they've taken or a workshop they've attended, or maybe they've got some connection to agriculture.
Sure.
But, once those are pointed out to people, then they can start to look around and notice for themselves what's being done to manage the land and different ways that people are managing it.
Do you talk to people who have hesitations, reservations, are struggling with transitioning from more conventional agricultural practices to, cover crops and no-till?
Typically, no. I don't have a whole lot of people that contact me And a lot of that comes down to it's going to be very hard for people to change their ways when their paycheck depends on it.
Right.
And transitioning into that no-till system, there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of things that people are unfamiliar with. And just that amount of risk, I think it turns people away from it. The people that I do, discuss a lot of these topics with would be my students. And then it's always nice, they get out of high school, maybe they've got, they're working as agronomists, or maybe they've returned to the farm. I do get a lot of former students who contact me and, have questions about things that they could do or things that they could try.
That's probably a pretty good feeling, right, as a teacher, as an educator?
Well, I always tell students, I'm not trying to say that anything that they're doing is incorrect. I'm just trying to show them some of the things that I do. I'm sharing my story with them, and down the road, they need to make some changes to keep some of what I do in mind.
Yeah. Are terms, when people use terms like conventional ag or sustainable ag or regenerative ag, are those useful terms for someone who is actually working on a farm?
Yes and no. They've all three of those have got definitions. And I think the important terms would be the sustainable and the regenerative ag.
Yeah.
Those are terms that we want people to be thinking about. We want them to be focused on sustaining our resources, regenerating the ones that have been depleted or degraded to some extent. So I guess I don't think about them a whole lot, but they are important, and they are things that we should have in the back of our mind as we're making decisions.
You have three children, and I'm wondering, are you optimistic about as those children, they're pretty small, but as those children grow, and if they wanted to follow in your footsteps, are you optimistic that they'll be able to?
Yes, I do. I do think that there would be a spot for them in the far in the family operation. It may be necessary for them to do, something like I'm doing, where we're working off the farm to kind of supplement income and have health insurance. But I do think that it is a very realistic possibility for them to return to the farm.
Yeah. I know that you have to go teach class, so we'll let you go. But I'm wondering if there are any final thoughts that you have for people in the state of South Dakota listening who don't have a connection to farming anymore, because the numbers, the percentage, the ratio of people who are connected to the land and who are not has shifted. What would you say to some of the people who don't have a lot of experience with farming? What should they open their eyes to?
It's kind of a loaded question there, but for people who aren't connected to ag, I guess things for them to think about is the producers in the state, we really do care about the land. We care about maintaining its quality. We care about soil health. We have a lot of different factors that we have to deal with. So a lot of times it's hard to make those changes. But we really do what we can and when we can. And it's something that's important for all of us who are in production ag to do what's best for the land.
Mark Meesar, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
You are welcome.